program that we're doing.
Uh-huh.
And so this will be different. Typically, when I'm doing an oral history with people and I want to ask a question, I'll make a little T with my fingers. And the person I'm chatting with will go, oh, I see you're making a little T. That means you want to ask a question. So I'll pause in my discussion here.
Uh-huh.
You won't be able to see that.
No.
So I don't know how we'll work it out. We'll just do it. Helen, can you please spell for me your name?
First and last name both?
Yes, please.
Okay. H-E-L-E-N. Helen is my first name. And last name is Lindemann. L-I-N-D-E-M-A-N.
Do you know Dan Lindemann out of Page?
No, I don't.
Okay, just thought I would check. And you were born at Grand Canyon, is that correct?
Yes.
What year was that?
1938.
What were your parents doing at Grand Canyon in 1938?
Well, that's what everybody asks me. my parents were both from Iowa, and my dad was farming with a brother and with his dad, and he said when the price of corn dropped to 10 cents a bushel, he knew that he was single and he was the one that could go out and do something else. So he made several trips out to Grand Canyon and worked for a length of time and then moved out there permanently. And of course he knew my mother and had dated her before he moved out there, and so they continued to write back and forth to each other. And pretty soon he said, why don't you come out here and let's get married? And so she did.
Wow. Do you remember, did your father ever talk to you about his first few trips out to Grand Canyon? What years were those, and what did he do?
I've got that information in my book. I've got several of the way that I got that information was through some assignments, or I guess they were rated in a certain way. Workers were at that time.
Okay.
And so his rating and his wages and so forth. And so he never did talk about it too much, but I was thinking that I put that, let's see, in my book here. In March 1929, he was at the Grand Canyon. Let's see, the first one I found said 1925. From February 1925 until November 1925, and then it was March 1929 when he returned and was an equipment operator for the National Park Service and remained in that position until 1950.
Wow. So the first time your father was there for almost a year, did he work for the National Park Service then as well?
Yes, he did. He had served in France in World War I.
Okay.
And so he had a certificate or something that he could use dynamite. And they were building trails, like the Bright Angel Trail.
Okay.
And so he worked with, he had a crew, and they were dynamiting out rocks and so forth, and that was when Elmer Wattahamaji worked for him.
Okay. Interesting. Do you think your father worked on the construction of the South Kaibab Trail?
That I'm not sure. My dad took a lot of pictures, and he went down and went fishing at the Bright Angel. That stream that runs into the Colorado River.
Yeah, Bright Angel Creek.
Yes, uh-huh. He went fishing there often, and so the Kaibab Trail, I'm trying to think exactly where that goes down.
Well, it starts just a ways east of the village.
Yeah.
And heads on out down to the Black Bridge.
Uh-huh. I think that he went down there because we were, I wanted to hike down to Phantom Ranch before we moved away from Grand Canyon. And so when I was 12 years old, my brother and a cousin and I hiked down the Bright Angel Trail and back up the Kaibab.
Well, how about that?
It was a shorter distance, but much steeper.
What are your first recollections of being a small child there at the South Rim?
I have a lot of good memories when I was little. Dr. Harold Bryant was the superintendent, and his wife often entertained the ladies in the community, and so I remember my mother fixing me up real fancy in a new coat and dress and everything so I could go to a tea at the Bryant's house, and I was pretty small then.
Fun.
Sledding. We lived in that duplex right there at Tonto and Navajo, where they break off there in the village.
Okay.
And so they closed off that street. Let's see, would it be Tonto that goes down the hill toward the railroad track? Anyway, they closed that off, both ends, so kids could go sledding.
Oh, fun.
And it was wonderful. So, and of course, we didn't have TVs or any of this electronic equipment, so we made up our own games, and I tell about all of that in my book.
Okay. And can you tell me the title of your book, please?
I was born at the Grand Canyon.
Okay, and did you self-publish that?
Say that again.
Who's the publisher of the book?
A company down south, and I did not. Let's see if their name is in here because. I didn't get an ISBN number.
Okay.
And so it's not possible to buy it, over the internet or anything like that. But
okay.
I did sell it to a salesman, and he bought like 150 copies. And so I know that there have been copies circulated at the Grand Canyon.
Fun.
I don't know if there are any more of them left or not.
Okay. Do you know how many were printed in the print run?
I think probably around 200. I would have to go through my records again.
Okay. Okay. Fun. Very fun. Well, I sent you a check. I definitely ordered the book, and I look forward to reading that. What were a couple of the highlights in the book that you would want to recount to me about Grand Canyon?
One of my most wonderful memories was going up to the rim of the Grand Canyon and for the Easter sunrise service. That just was the most marvelous thing on earth, I thought. And actually, when we moved back to Iowa, we were able to listen to that on the radio for a couple of years. And so that was pretty amazing. But just to sit there and watch the sun come up, you know, and worship the Lord, that was a fantastic time.
Nice. And what else?
I'd like to go with my dad. In the evenings, we didn't live far from where he walked to work, and so when he came home, then I'd like to go with him when he went down to the Babbitt's grocery store. Down, it was by the post office there.
Right.
And we would get the mail, and I love being outside, and there were enough kids around that there was always somebody to play a game with or something outside.
Fun. Who do you remember some of the other children that you grew up with?
Yes. Let's see, Catherine Daisy, Dean and Mary Jane Daisy, her parents, lived in the other side of the duplex, and he was a park ranger, and so she was a lot of fun to play with. Gail Rundell Slesnick, she lived in California, I think, in the San Diego area, and she is a wonderful painter. She paints beautiful pictures, and so if you just type in GAYLESLEZINEK, I think it just comes up on Google, you know, because of her paintings and so forth. Sherma Moore, she was a friend and lived just across the street and down a couple of houses. And then the boys were John and T. Cook, Sam Turner, the Verkamps, especially Susie and Mike, and an older one. I'm trying to think of his name. Another thing that I really enjoyed was the Hopi Indian dances. And when we lived at Grand Canyon, we had a lot of company that our family that came from Iowa to visit us, and we always took them up to look in the curio shops, you know, the Hopi house, and usually we're around there for the Hopi Indian dances, and that is a special memory to me.
Fun. Did you know Hopi Sammy?
Sammy, yes. Yes, I did.
Yeah, I mean, he had, of course, a wonderful Hopi last name.
Yeah, we just called him Sammy.
Yeah.
He was wonderful, too. Really enjoyed the Indians out there. And let's see, there was Supai Mary. And she came up from the Havasu Indian Reservation. And she would come to our house, and my mother would give her material so that she could do some sewing and things like that. She made a doll cradle for me before we left, and we still have that.
Is this the Mary that worked at the laundry?
No, this Sue Pi Mary was, well, I've got a picture of her, and let me see. I don't know. I think you can Google her name in, too. She looked like she was 100 years old when she left the Grand Canyon, but...
Was she a Wattahamagee like Elmer, or was she...
Okay, her real name was Mary Wescogomi.
Wescogomi, okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. We know she lived from about 1866 to
1963.
To 1963,
okay.
She didn't talk much, but she and my mother seemed to be able to communicate enough that she would often stop at the door, and she would have things to sell, and my mother would buy some things. And, and then, of course, after we moved to Iowa, and I think I told you on the message that my first husband and our my children hiked down to the Havasu Indian Reservation and to the Havasu Falls. And then about 6 years ago, I went back down there again with my grandchildren. I hiked down and flew out.
Okay.
I was, my children all met out there, and we celebrated my 70th birthday.
Fun.
Yeah.
That must have been fun. Did you know Elmer? I would assume that Elmer Wattahamagee, I would assume that your father worked with him.
Yes, I knew him quite well. He was just such a faithful employee, worked hard, and in fact, my dad raised a garden in the Victory Gardens.
Okay.
He had one of those, and so we would take food and clothes and things like that out to the what we called the Indian Camp, and I think they have a different name for it, and have rebuilt it since I lived there.
Would that have been Supai Camp?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think they've upgraded it, and I think that's wonderful because those people worked real hard. But anyway, I went out there several times with my dad when he took them something out of the garden or some clothes or something like that. And then when the peaches were ripe down in the canyon, Elmer would bring some up for us.
Oh, that's nice.
Oh, it was wonderful. My mother loved to cook and can, and so she canned vegetables that we had from the Victory Garden. And then my dad liked to hunt. He was on his days off and so forth, and so he went deer hunting, and so we had deer meat too and venison.
Nice. What else do you remember about Elmer?
Just that he was big. You know, of course my dad was small. He was only about 5'3 or 5'4, and so and I'm only about 5 feet, so everybody's taller than we are, but Elmer was just big and strong and healthy and a hard worker, you know.
And sounds like a wonderful man.
He really was.
Let's think about the Verkamps a little bit. Did you know Mary would have been Jack's first wife?
I don't recall her.
Okay. And I'm thinking of some of the other Verkamps that you might have known.
Oh, yeah, I should be able to. I was thinking about him earlier. His picture was in the pioneer when they gave out awards. Well, David Cunningham got the award for his father's. David Cunningham was my brother's best friend.
Okay, so Dave's father was Ed, is that right? That was Ed Cummings. I'm sorry. Well, what can you remember about Dave?
Well, he was just a real nice kid, and my brother enjoyed going over to his house, and he came to our house some, and he was a couple of years older than I was,
uh-huh.
And so mainly what I remember is that he was just a nice kid. And also, I don't know if he has told anybody or not, but his mother was a Harvey girl, and her picture used to be up at the Bright Angel Lodge.
Okay.
I think that should be known.
Fun.
He actually told that to my brother. The next time you go to Grand Canyon, you go in that room right straight across from the front door there, and it was kind of a museum room, and I don't know if it still is or if her picture is still there or not, but it was on the left wall. I guess I should say the west wall.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Then Paul Schnurr.
Yes, and his father, Dr. Schnurr.
Yes.
What do you remember about Paul growing up?
Oh, he was a wonderful kid. He, the doctor lived in a house just down that street from us, and so he spent a lot of time at our house. And I remember him even, he was about my brother's age, too, but I just remember him saying that he was going to be a doctor like his dad, and sure enough, he was. And I've had the chance to visit with him when we went out to a history symposium. I think we were out there for the first one that they had.
Okay.
Or that you all had, or you know, Bob Aldridge and Mr. Quinn interviewed my brother and I at that time, so there should be an interview somewhere around there, because they said they were going to put it in their file.
You bet. Well, great. If Bob and Mike did that, then I'm following along way behind the game here, and that interview, of course, will be archived with the museum collection, and that's great. That's great. Who else?
I want to tell you something else about Dr. Schnurr.
Please.
He was just a fantastic doctor. And, you know, it was really nice to have a hospital there in Grand Canyon. And I felt bad when it closed, and I never was able to find out how many children were actually born at the Grand Canyon. But that was such a privilege to be born at the Grand Canyon Hospital, and it was just down the street from our house. And but Dr. Schnurr, my mother had a lung problem called bronchiectasis.
Okay.
And when we lived in the high altitude there, she would cough up blood. And so Dr. Schnurr said, "Well, I think I can help you." He said, "But you've got to sign a release here so that I can try this new medication on you."
Hmm.
And she did, and it worked, and she never had the problem again. And I think it was streptomycin or something like that that was just out, you know. And, and so that was, I just had a lot of respect for him and for Paul, and then Paul's sister Sally was younger than I was, so didn't know her very well, but Paul spent quite a bit of time in our house.
Fun. What did you not cover in the book that you wish you had?
Kennedy, I don't know if you're familiar with him. He worked for the National Park Service, and I think his name maybe was William, but as a kid we called him Biff.
Okay.
He lived almost straight across the street from us there.
Have you sent a copy of your book to the museum collection where Mike Quinn still works?
Does he work out at the museum?
Well, he works for the National Park Service at what you think of it as the museum collection or the special collections there within the park.
Yes. Well, there should be one of my books there.
Okay. If it went to Bob Aldrich, it probably got there as well. When did your book come out? When did you have it printed up?
Well, when my kids took me out there on my 70th birthday, and that would be 6 years ago, they said you should write a book.
Mm-hmm.
I was telling them everything. You need to remember this. You need to remember this. And they said, oh, you need to write a book. And so basically, I wrote what I thought my kids would be interested in. And then I thought, well, I know my relatives probably would be interested in it, too. And then I thought, well, people from Grand Canyon might be, too. And so then I have distributed it here in Iowa and to relatives and to the salesman who bought it out at Grand Canyon.
Uh-huh. Fun. So your father worked for the Park Service. What did he do when you were growing up? Do you remember what he did there?
Called him heavy equipment operator, and he plowed snow in the winter, and he worked on roads. I think I've got a picture of him on a roller where he was, they put some fresh oil or something down on a road, and he was running the roller over it to smooth it out.
Okay.
Fun. A blue collar worker and
mm-hmm.
Had probably four or five people that kind of worked under him, and most of them were Indians. There was a Wes Cogamy, and I don't remember his first name, but the first time we went back to visit, I saw him working on a by the visitor center. There was a crew working on the road or the sidewalk there, and I said, do you remember Shorty Rowan? And he said, oh, I sure do. Those were the good old days.
Oh.
My dad was easygoing, I think it just worked out perfect for him to work with the Indian.
Fun.
And he learned a lot of information, you know, from them, too, on different things, like medicines and things like that. We can learn a lot from.
Did he talk to you about that?
Yes.
And what sort of medicines did he, what kind of things did he learn?
I'm trying to think what it was that we could make tea out of, something that grew out there. But I can't tell you what the plant was.
I wonder if it was, there's a kind of a stick, green stick-looking brush called Mormon tea.
That's what I'm thinking. I know what you're talking about, and I think that might be it.
Okay. And you mentioned your mother had tea with Dr. Bryant's wife.
Uh-huh.
What else do you remember about the Bryants?
Oh, they were marvelous people. they were very kind and generous, and you know, their house was always open for company, and I don't know what if that house where they lived, just you know, down the hill from Fur Camp there. I don't know if that is still a house or not, but that's where they lived, and I just thought it was the most magnificent house I'd ever been in. So we were there on several different occasions, and I know that my dad got along well with Harold Bryant, and actually when he retired, Harold presented him with an award of some kind for the service that he did at the Grand Canyon. And then after we moved to Iowa, we exchanged Christmas cards with them, and she was very talented at drawing pictures.
Oh.
And so the Christmas cards that she sent had something about each one of their children and where they lived, and she drew pictures just kind of with a pencil or pen or something, and she was just very talented.
Fun. Helen, remind me again, how old were you when you left Grand Canyon?
I was 12.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And do you have any memories or recollections of Emory Kolb?
Oh, yes. Oh, he was energetic.
How so?
Oh, yes, that was another thing that we did when we had company come from Iowa, would be that we would go down to the Cope studio and watch pictures of, you know, them going down the Colorado River.
Uh-huh.
And he had movies that he showed, and he was just little, you know, not a very big man, and pretty thin, but just very energetic.
Fun. And what do you remember about, did you go to Sunday school, by the way?
Yes, I did. That was one of my favorite things, too.
And do you remember Mary Hoover? Because she was teaching Sunday school. What year did you leave the park?
1950.
Well, she had just arrived in 46, and so you may have just missed her.
Or she may have been one of the last Sunday school teachers that we had, because that was her husband a minister?
No, she never married, did Mary.
Oh, okay. It was, we had Sunday school on the top of the community building.
Mm-hmm.
And So I spent a lot of time at the community building and always enjoyed walking past the mules, walking down to the community building.
Where did you go for your school classes?
To what is now, I think, probably the elementary school. That was because we only had school, we didn't have kindergarten, so it was just 1 through 8.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was the main reason that we moved back to Iowa, because when my brother graduated from the 8th grade, my parents were elderly, and they said, you know, most of the kids went up to Wasatch in Utah.
Yes.
And my parents said, we're too old to have you go to high school that far away. And so that was when we had the reason why we moved back to Iowa.
Okay. Yeah, that was must have been a real decision point for a number of employees with families with small children at the park when the kids were ready for high school.
I think the Wasatch College high school was a real good high school, and I know that a lot of them I think they got along well and were well taken care of and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm in touch with Ethel Soule. Do you know her?
No.
Have you heard of Sherm Moore? He was with the. He worked with the mules.
No. Not that good.
Ethel Cole, I don't happen to have her telephone number, but I do have her address, and I have enjoyed her memory. She's about 91, but has a perfect memory of when they first moved there. Let me see here. She lived out at Row Well.
Yes.
And it wasn't very far from the Indian camp, and so they played with the Indians. There were 3 girls of them, and she and her older sister are still living, and both have such good memories that should be written down.
Write
a book when I was writing mine, because I contacted her with different questions. And
if you have her contact information, I'd love to get that.
I will give you her snail mail address.
Okay.
She doesn't have email, but
no worries. And you know what? You can, when we can keep doing the interview now, and we'll put that on the list of things to do, and you can send that to me on Facebook as well.
Oh, okay. I'll do that.
And so did you know Ethel at the time when you were a girl there? Did you meet her then?
Well, she and her sister are older sisters of Sherma Moore.
Okay.
And they were quite a bit older than Sherma. So Sherma is the one that we had in our house and, you know, did things together and so forth. And then after I wrote my book, I sent one to Sherma. And then she said, oh, my sisters would like one too.
Oh, fun.
And so I have found her address if you want to take it down now?
Yes, please. Go ahead.
Ethel A. Cole, C-O-L-E.
Okay.
2050 West State Route 89A. Number 140. Cottonwood, Arizona.
Okay.
It probably would be fun for you just to slip down there and visit with her.
Absolutely.
The zip code is 86326. And then dash 5278.
5278. Mm-hmm. Great. Excellent. I will definitely try to track her down. That would be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Great. Let's see. I'm trying to think of so we talked about Emery Kolb and Superintendent Bryant. To think of who was the head of Fred Harvey at the time. Did you know any other of the Fred Harvey children? Did you play with them at all?
No. They lived in a different area there at Grand Canyon.
Okay.
I think David Cunningham lived in that area, and that would be over in the area close to the schoolhouse. And the ones that I knew the best were up on the, well, in the other area.
Okay.
I don't know what it's called. I just know that we lived at the corner of Tonto Navajo Street.
Uh-huh. Fun. What else? What other interesting memories do you have? It'd be fun to...
One thing that really impressed me that happened was that there, when we were living there, an airplane was flying over the Grand Canyon at night, and the pilot had about, I think, 3 passengers, and he said he thought something was wrong with the plane and they should parachute out.
Mm-hmm.
And so they did, and they saw lights, and all of a sudden they didn't see any lights anymore, and they wondered what happened to the lights. Why'd they go out all of a sudden? And so their parachutes caught on the edge of the canyon, and they were finally rescued about 3 days later. But then when they were rescued, they went out on the porch at the Elder Bar Hotel, and about everybody that lived at Grand Canyon went up there to hear them. I just remember a large crowd and how impressive that was to hear from them how they survived, and you know, on a ledge in the Grand Canyon until they were rescued.
Yes. What? So they came around through the South Rim and gave a talk there.
Yes. Uh huh. I think they were rescued from the South Rim. Dean Daisy, who lived at the other end of our duplex, was often one that, when somebody fell over the edge, he would be one of the rangers that would go down and pick up the pieces, basically. And that happened several times when we were there.
What else do you remember about Dean?
Dean was a happy man and very nice to get along with, and energetic. Not a real tall man, but we sure enjoyed having them on the other side of the wall.
And so he was a very close neighbor then?
Yes, he was.
Fun. Who else were your close neighbors?
The Kennedys and the Moores and then on up the hill were the Rundells and the Cooks, and of course Sam Turner lived down at the train station.
Did he work for the Santa Fe then?
His dad was the one that ran the depot, the train depot.
Okay.
I am still in touch with him occasionally.
Fun.
Let's see. Louis Shellback.
Sure.
I sure enjoy the what he wrote in his journal and his granddaughter putting that in the Old Pioneer, because we got to visit his, he had a collection of rocks and butterflies and all different kinds of things like that in a building, and our class got to go visit, and we were instructed to keep our hands off of everything. he did a real good job.
Fun.
Preston was older, and so I didn't know him very well. And then I think there was Donnie Lou, and they were both older than we were, so didn't know them very well.
And it sounds like you all spent quite a while as children, maybe after school or certainly during the summers, just doing outside play. And what kind of games did you play?
Well, we had a croquet set that we set up in our yard there. And my brother loved to play baseball, and so we played baseball. And was a building not too far from where we lived that it was quite a long building, and so we played what we called Annie over, and through, you know, we'd divide up into three or four on each side of the building and say Annie over, and then throw a ball over, and then whoever, if someone caught the ball, they would come around and try to tag us. So that was fun. And we played kick the can, hide and seek. It was fun to go out at night because bats were usually flying around there. And we took popsicle sticks and put together in a star shape, and they would stick together, and we'd throw them up in the air, and then the bats would be attracted to that. And then, of course, when they dropped, they all fell apart, you know, and then we put them together again.
Fun. And where did the water, drinking water, come from at that time?
I believe the same place it comes from now, Roaring Springs, is it? Over on the north side.
Maybe it came from Indian Gardens at that time. I don't think the Roaring Spring pipeline was put in until the 60s.
Okay.
And was there any thought amongst you children that water was a scarce resource there?
Yes, absolutely.
How so?
We were just, just run the water that you need, and that's it, you know. And we did water our irrigate our garden, but it was processed water from a sewer.
Okay.
There was a big tank out there by where the Victory Gardens were.
Mm-hmm.
That's a football field or something now.
So you would use reclaimed water for the garden then?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And at that time, the powerhouse was making electricity for the park. Is that right?
Yes. Yes. People here in Iowa would say, oh, well, before we had electricity and running water, and I thought, I have no idea what that would be like, because we always had electricity and indoor plumbing, and I think that's why some of our relatives like to come out and visit us.
So was the powerhouse making electricity then for 24 hours a day, or was there a downtime in the middle of the night when there wouldn't be any power? Do you remember?
Oh, I think it was 24 hours a day, because I don't remember ever not having electricity. And my dad would get called out in the night sometimes to plow snow, and I don't remember ever not having electricity.
Mm-hmm. When you were over at the post office getting mail, do you remember hearing the rumble of the powerhouse, or was it pretty quiet?
It was loud. And then they also, there was a whistle or something down there too that they would blow the whistle at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and it seems to me like it was right beside the laundry there.
Yes, that's right. And did that whistle blow at noon as well, and at early in the morning, or was it just once a day? Do you remember?
Well, I think it was at noon, and at 1 o'clock, and at 5 o'clock. And
okay.
I can't remember at 8 o'clock, but possibly then.
So it was sort of serving as the timepiece.
Yes.
Nice.
I was with my dad, what would have been 1945, when the World War II ended.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really chaotic, because everybody was celebrating. And everybody was just wild about it, you know. And,
huh.
And so that was pretty interesting.
What else do you remember about that?
Just that, they were blowing the whistle, and I was asking my dad, what's going on? And he said, well, they just got news that the Japanese had surrendered, I believe it was,
mm-hmm.
and that the war is over, and having served in World War I, he was thrilled that World War II was over, too.
Interesting.
And but there were a lot of people in the grocery store, and they were trying to close, and nobody wanted to close. They just wanted to stay there and talk, and everybody was excited.
Hmm. I'm going to go back to the powerhouse for a minute. Could you hear that powerhouse from the rim when you were up?
Yes, I think so.
Okay. Well, we were just over there the other day, and you know, the big equipment is still inside there, and I was thinking, gee, I wonder how loud this stuff was.
Uh-huh, it was loud.
And there was a smokestack there.
Uh-huh.
And did that smokestack, were they burning coal for that, or oil? Do you remember? Okay, no worries.
I remember oil tankers coming on the railroad there.
So. Okay. And that would make sense that it was possibly oil-fired, fuel-driven that way.
Uh-huh.
And the trains were coming and going a few times a day.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
My aunt and uncle came on the train several times. We went down there to them.
To the station to meet them?
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. And did you ever take the there. Did you ever take the train out to Williams and then points beyond to go back and visit family?
One time, my grandmother was sick, and my mother and brother and I got on the train and came back to Iowa to be with her.
What time of year was that?
I think it was probably in the summer. I don't remember the exact month or anything.
Okay. Okay. Well, we've been chatting here now for almost an hour, and I think we'll wrap things up here. Is there anything else you'd like to mention in this interview before I turn the machine off?
It was just a wonderful experience growing up at Grand Canyon, and there is one more thing about Santa Branch.
Yes, please.
They had a swimming pool down there.
Uh-huh.
And that was wonderful. And we didn't get to go swimming because my brother, we had carried our lunch down there, and we got down there by noon, and we ate our sandwich, dangled our feet in the water,
mm-hmm.
and then my brother said, okay, it's time to start up again.
Oh, my gosh.
And he had been up the Kaibab Trail, and so he knew that it was going to be difficult. And we didn't spend much time there. I think my phone is beeping. I don't know if it's going to cut us off or not.
Oh, it might be running out of gas here. Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much. I'm going to turn the machine off now. And I simply do that by hitting this button here. This interview was conducted on November 20th, 2014, and the interviewer was Tom Martin, M-A-R-T-I-N. This interview was conducted by phone between Flagstaff, Indiana, and Helen's home in Iowa. Sorry, that was Flagstaff, Arizona.